Great song choice, Brian. Evidently, he got pushed off. We are live today. Thanks, everyone. This is William Tincup. You are listening to Drive Through HR, and I am back from Amsterdam. I've been in Amsterdam for the last 6 days at HR Tech Europe. It was fantastic. It was the third year of their show. And, you know, the third year of anything, right? They're just now kind of finding their legs. They're in their infancy, and it's not comparable to the U.S. show and really in any way, shape, or form. It's just a vastly different kind of the European audience is so different than the American audience. And what I've told people for years about this show is that, you know, you'll have the VP of HR from ING or from Nokia or from some major company standing in line at vendor booths, waiting very patiently, 6, 7, 9 deep, you know, waiting to talk to the vendors, which it's been my experience in the U.S. that's very difficult to do, to have very high-level people that waiting in line at a booth. So, but, you know, it's fantastic to be back. I love Amsterdam. I also love my bed and the comforts of my home and my wife and kids. So I'm glad to be back. And without any further ado, why don't we get right into our wonderful guest? So Diana is a friend, compadre, and I can't wait to kind of hear what she has to say over the next 20-something minutes. So, Diana, introduce yourself. You've been in the industry for a long time. You've done the chief bottle washer deal. You've done the whole bit. If you don't mind, tell the audience, as if they don't know who you are, explain who you are.
Okay. Thank you, William, and welcome back from Amsterdam. I know that has to be a conflict for you, wanting to sleep in your own bed in the fun of Amsterdam. So.
There's several conflicts, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I have been in the industry for 34 years. I've done everything from sales, implementation, product management. Before this recent company, CloudMills, I was CEO at Advantech. We sold that to a larger competitor. So I have seen so much in the industry, not just from the vendor side, being a vendor, but also from the consumer side. I've been a customer of the products myself. So that is actually what led to this current company, which is called CloudMills. And we do all things integration and synchronization only in the HR industry. That's kind of what we do. So it's been fun putting it together, and it feels good because it solves people's problems.
Well, Diana, let's jump right into it. And what currently keeps you up at night within HR?
Yeah, within HR, for me personally, what keeps me up is the keeping the, you know, there's so many choices. There's so much huge investment that's gone in across the industry into systems already. And then there's all these cool new systems, best of breed, and people struggle with, you know, keeping that investment that they've made alive as long as possible so they get the return on that investment. But then going out and picking the solution that's solving a very pointed problem that they might be having. And so for me personally, what keeps me up is how do I deliver that integration in a very, very affordable manner, because the days of steep consulting dollars and spending 60% of your budget on synchronization have got to end if the industry is to move on. So I think constantly about how to keep prices really, really low. It's a little bit counterintuitive, but I want to drive prices down, down, down for those consumers and keep the quality and value up high. I don't think about how to charge more. I think about how to charge less. So that's what keeps me up.
Well, that's a darn good one, I might add, to keep you up. Kind of staying in that same lane, and you've been in the industry a long time. What do you see? Do you see us at a pivot point relative to how people's contracts are handled? And I'll give some context to the question. Had a conversation with Ray Wang at HR Tech, and talking about the average length of contracts we're seeing within enterprise solutions and just in general. And so some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think the industry is at an interesting bifurcation point because it kind of grew up in the licensed software, licensed services, long-term contract world where you would sign a contract that's a 3 or 5 year contract. The cloud is kind of changing that, although I will say from an industry perspective, a lot of the cloud vendors still treat it the same way. I think you're going to see that changing as some of these kind of young bucks come up with their solutions, and it's a pay by the drink kind of thing, and they say, if we're not earning your business each and every day, then you should go somewhere else. So I think there's an interesting bifurcation point coming for real where some of the younger vendors will absolutely change the way contract value and terms and length are viewed and actually executed.
Yeah, and it'll probably be a slower change than we all kind of think of because the investment that's happening in Silicon Valley and in Wall Street and even for the publics, they count those contracts differently. They count they monetize, quote unquote, monetize those contracts and look at those contracts in a much different way. I remember, when I was on the services side, we went to a model where we didn't have contracts, which actually helped us in the sales process, because you basically, anything you can keep away from legal, the better. But the problem is when you went to a bank to get a line of credit, it actually made it harder to get a line of credit because you didn't have contracts, because you didn't have.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how much of that will change. I agree it will change. I just wonder how much of it will not change or change as fast because of the financial considerations, if you will. Diana, I have to ask you about integrations and mm-hmm. the current world of integrations because you've been, again, on all sides of this thing, and now you run a company that really helps people with integration. So give the audience kind of the current state, like, okay, you have 18 different systems and they're all over the place, and that's okay. And so here's the current world. Here's what we currently see in the world of integrations.
Yeah. So in the current world, somebody has 18 systems. Some of the vendors don't do any integration. They make you go and mine the data and bring it out and move it. Others of the vendors think they solve the problem by giving you a very well-documented API, which is all nice and good, but you still have to go get the data and often work on the data. Some of those vendors, literally you have to go in and scrape the screens to get the data because there's no mechanism for getting data in and out. That's true on a lot of the international payroll systems that maybe, they're a little boutique in-country payroll, and they really just didn't build it for integration. And yet the mothership, an SAP or a PeopleSoft or an Ultimate or Workday, whatever it might be, they want an HR system that's a single system. So it's all over the board, William, from very clean APIs, good extract tools to get the data out to you literally have to go and scrape the screen and look at the data and then turn it into data to get it done. It's all over the board. And I see that changing for the next 10 years, again, because of, people grow through acquisition. They acquire systems because of, they're solving a pain problem. So they end up, the average American company has 7 different systems just to run payroll and HR, and that's just if they're in the U.S. So the landscape is varied and complicated, and the problem that a lot of folks have with it is that they have really smart people in their own IT department, but they're asking them to do a process that's not repeatable, and those people aren't born and bred in HR, so they don't know how to go get the data out of ADP and Silk Road and Cornerstone and Ultimate. I mean, it's not that they're not smart. They are. They don't have the expertise in that, and they're also working on revenue-generating or cost-cutting programs within their own company to make their own bottom line. So they really don't have much interest in taking on that HR challenge and landscape, nor should they.
Well, you know, it's you know, I've been doing a lot of user adoption consulting for the last couple of years, and user adoption related consulting is fantastic. The vendors love talking about it on some level because it's in their best interest, and so do practitioners. But the thing is, it's slow moving because everyone wants to fix it via UX and UI, and they basically want to make it, well, if the software is really simple, then people will use it, which is, you know, probably a third of the problem, maybe 20% of the problem, but then you've got all this other stuff. But who owns user adoption is very similar to me to who owns integrations, meaning does the practitioner drive those conversations? Okay, I sit down with my vendor, and I'm switching out, I'm moving from payroll player A to payroll player B. Do I now drive the integration conversation, or do the vendors drive those conversations? So what's your take on, like, if it's the practitioners, how do we teach, train, and facilitate their learning so they can be adept about having those conversations?
Yeah, that's a really good comparison, because at the end of the day, the only person who really, really has a stake on the entire ecology is the practitioner. Because if someone's coming in and replacing a learning management system, or they only care about the point-to-point of the thing that they're selling and adding value to, which, excuse me, is as it should be. They don't care that you also have a HR to Active Directory and HR to a onboarding system, because they're not involved in that transaction. And it's not the vendor's business to be in integrating all of this either. They do it because they're forced to it from the clients. If the clients didn't ask for it, they certainly would not have had it on their roadmap. So at the end of the day, just like user adoption is owned by the company, integration has to be owned by the company. And training, it's a hairy, I call it a hairball, you know, because usually companies choke on it. It's a very complex set of rules and systems, and I mean, user training, I think, would be awesome for companies. There's places like HR Tech. I mean, you see places they can go to get training, but it's usually not it's not broad enough, you know, all of the ways that you can do it. So unfortunately, the way you get trained is a practitioner takes hold of the problem and looks at Boomi and Informatica and CloudMills, and through that begins the education of what integration truly looks like. Because if it comes from the vendor side, it's really more point-to-point instead of holistic.
Right.
So, yep.
What's your... There are some BI plays that are nibbling around our space, but their approach, as I understand it, and again, I'm a neophyte when it comes to this stuff, but their approach seems to be pulling the data out of the system and up into the cloud, not necessarily getting them to talk to one another, but doing it more from a reporting engine perspective. Again, I could have all this wrong, but it just seems to me that that's kind of their approach of saying, we're not necessarily going to get these things to talk together. We're going to pull all this stuff, this data, into the cloud and let you run reports off of it, which I could see being helpful, at least short term, at least from a reporting function. What's your take on kind of the BI ish players that are out there and kind of their approach to our market?
Yeah, first of all, it's important, right? I mean, analyzing the information is always important. And a lot of the analytics tools are looking to us, actually, because we're integrating, we have all that data to feed them. So we're a natural source to get all that data for those analytics engines. I think where they miss the boat a little bit is there's this concept of interoperability between systems that people want to know about. And when you just report on the systems without understanding that interoperability, and let me give you a simple example of what that means. You know, I have PeopleSoft who I'm going to create my job requisitions for, and it's going to go to a recruiting X system. And then it's once I hire them, it's going to go to a system Y onboarding system, and then from that it becomes a new hire back into my PeopleSoft system. So there's that interoperability of how many transactions are happening between those two and at what rate and pace, and how does that then bounce against my strategic plan. The analytics tools aren't quite linking those operations in a way that allows those dashboards to happen. They're going to get there, though, because at the end of the day, that's what the executives at the companies want. Between all these HR processes and data, what is happening and how does that ping against my plans? You know, where's the failure point? Where's the success story? So I think that's what's going to end up happening in BI, is they're going to be forced to these linkages from an operational standpoint, not just throw up the data and here's your dashboards without that. And a lot of them are already thinking about it.
Well, Diana, let me do a quick reset. Everybody, you're listening to Drive Through HR and Brian William on with Diana Shepherd. So I can't wait to hear your answer on this. So in 1998 was the first time I was ever trained on the Cognos Cube from Cognos.
Uh-huh.
And that was a long time ago, and it's amazing to me that we're not further along in the BI sector, and I just want to get your thoughts on why we're not.
Again, I really, not to be a Six Sigma geek or anything, I try to control myself, but the problem is data is not processes, and where things fall apart is the data that's linked processes. So we're not further along because it's heavy, heavy lifting to be a process-oriented, data-driven company. If you're not process-driven and you just throw a bunch of data in and then do some reports, now you just have more data that doesn't tell you anything. So that interoperability of processes and then the data linked at that level versus an HR dashboard that says we did this many new hires, well, that's great. You know, how many were we supposed to do and how long did it live in that funnel for what processes? And because whether it's Cognos, it doesn't matter what reporting tool it is. It's the framework that sets it up in a way that makes sense to each company. And if you can't build that data framework to do the reporting, then it's just like interesting, but it's like, you know, it's like looking at correlations all day with no causation.
Nice.
It's like, who cares? Yeah.
You know, I've made a drinking game out of big data so that every time I hear the term, really the marketing term big data, when real people talk about it, that's different. But most of the shtick at conferences over the next 2 years is going to be just that shtick. So I made a drinking game that I have to put my thumb to my forehead every time I hear that and take a shot. What's your take on HR's version of big data? Like, what should be, in all seriousness, what should we be looking at?
I think that big data, if you're a smaller, medium-sized company, you should be looking at big data as it spans an industry to do comparisons about, but not too much time, you know, a little bit of time. I think always if you have the discipline and the brain power in your own organization to look at political and economic factors and how they're impacting your business, and then you have the big data that's supporting those, again, correlations, it can give you a competitive advantage, there's no doubt. I mean, social issues, technology issues, economic factors, all of those things have an impact in your business, and if you can correlate those to what's happening in your own business to get a jump on the competition, then that's awesome. But I'm telling you, the brain power that you need to do that often, you know, kind of it overreaches what your company really needs and the benefit you're going to get from it. You have to be a pretty large company before big data, before you can afford the brain power to make sense of big data.
Nice. Well, let's. I want to pivot, and I want to ask. That would be, it would be remiss if I didn't ask you about women in HR tech, women in technology in general, if you like, because you've had your career. You've had a lot of different roles, and you've worked in sales, and you've worked in product. You've run as CEO. You've run, you know, several different companies. What do you see currently? Like, I don't need a history lesson. I can imagine, I can only imagine, actually, how oppressive it must have been when you first started out. But what do you think it's like now in the current version? And probably more important to me is, what do you think the next 10, 15 years will be for women in tech, or women in HR tech in particular?
Yeah, I think it is an exciting time for them, because what used to, I never found it oppressive. What I found mostly was that women who had what it took to succeed usually just checked out because they didn't want to play the game. But now, with there's just more transparency. In general, there is more transparency about what's happening within a business. And with that transparency, I think more people get to be collaborative, and so I think women have a better chance at success and staying in the game rather than checking out. I mean, guys love competition and winning. They don't love necessarily cooperation and transparency and let's all work this out. And I'm not saying all women do, for sure, but it's more of a natural fit with that style. And I think the world is morphing to that style with the speed of communication, with the amount of data available. And so I think they'll stay in the game longer, and I think they'll succeed. And they're growing up with technology. You know, if you go back when I started 34 years ago, you know, you really needed a computer science degree. You needed to have been educated in a traditionally non-female type of expertise. But in today, everybody's growing up with technology. So the interest gets sparked early for women, and I think they'll just play right alongside the men in the future.
Nice. Let me two follow-ups. One is about balance, because you had a family and kids and like all the other, you know, stuff. How did you balance it all? And the second part of that is, do you feel any sense of pressure to mentor other women in technology?
Yeah, I don't have a very popular stance on this because I believe you cannot have it all. You're going to trade something off, whether it's your own mental state, whether it's your family, whether it's your job. You just can't have it all. And again, not politically correct, but when you're charging hard at work, everybody needs a wife, including the women. So you have to find a way to get help. You have to find a way to get help to compete. And balance suffers. You know, balance absolutely suffers, as it suffers for men now too. You know, as I look at, you know, the 35, 40-year-olds who want to be involved in their kids' lives, they're struggling with balance too. So balance is an issue that I think is no longer a gender issue. Although certainly when it comes to a sick child or something, that more often falls to the female role, but wanting to be involved in your children's life and participate in their life, I think crosses gender boundaries now.
Do you think, Diana, do you think, in basically what you just said, that having so much remote access to technology today, again, balance, I mean, it writes that a little bit to where you don't have to be sitting, you know, in an environment where you're accessing everything. You can be at home or you can be on the road. Do you think that is a gigantic plus or maybe a negative?
I think it's a gigantic plus, and I think it's a gigantic plus for everybody. I think it's a gigantic plus that the world of work becomes global because everybody can communicate literally across the globe. I think it's a plus for families because you can flex those hours. Doesn't matter if you're working at 10 p.m. or 4 p.m. as long as whatever that assignment is on time and you're on task. And, again, I think that's a huge plus. Regardless of gender, I think the world is changing because of that. And I think it's a good thing.
Nice. We got about 4 minutes, three and a half minutes left. So what are some things that you just want, if you could right now be the czar of stopping things that bother you, what's something that you just want everybody to stop doing? Today, right now, never do it again. It kind of just gets to your soul a little bit.
I want vendors to stop hoarding and making it so hard to get to the data that belongs to the client. It's almost immoral, in my opinion. That's how strongly I feel about it. Set the data free. People, architect things thinking that they are making a retention play and it's going to be hard, or they just don't think about it. And I just think it's wrong. That information belongs to the client who bought your product. Set it free.
That actually, you might have just came up with the 2013 most amazing quote I've ever heard. One, that it's immoral to hold on to the data, and two, set the data free. That your stands out as the number one for the year for me as far as so simplistically on point on it's and that's the way it's always been, right? It's always been I'll let you look at the data. I'll let you not actually touch the data, but you can kind of view it from outside the outside the glass.
Right. Or I'll charge you to get it. It's like, really? You're going to charge me for my own information? I'm just passionate about that topic. It's like set it free, give people the tools they need to get at it, to run their business, and to make their business prosper, and everybody wins. Everybody wins.
Well, and it's kind of like open source movement, right? As soon as you let a lot of people collaborate on information, especially just kind of use that is the example, you never know what can happen, right? If you give access to that freely and it's not accessible, so who knows what could happen with the data. We'd be further along in BI probably, right?
Yep,
So,
absolutely.
Well, Diana, where can folks connect with you? We're out of time, and share with us that, and then thank you so much for coming on and having lunch with us.
Oh, sure. www.cloudmills.com. You can get to us, and I'll give my cell phone number, too. It's 813-956-2236, and I'll pretty much talk to anybody on the topic because we're on a mission. So I've enjoyed my time, and thank you very much for having me, too.
Well, wonderful. Everybody have a good rest of the day. We're out of here.
Thanks.